You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
4 years ago, Ilan Pappé, historian and activist, spoke in Vancouver. He just published a new book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, and his talk focused on those events. There was an overflow crowd at the main Vancouver downtown library. The doors to the room remained open, and people outside stood attentive, listening to a dynamic, detailed, new, and engrossing presentation. Ilan Pappé is crossing Canada on another speaking tour, starting in Montreal this Monday, and he will be in Vancouver this coming Saturday, May 5th, again at the Vancouver Public Library. His topic: The False Paradigm of Peace, Revisiting the Palestine Question. Professor Pappé now teaches in Britain, where he is director of the European Center for Palestine Studies and co-director of the Center for Ethnopolitical Studies, both part of Exeter University. And right now we have reached Ilan Pappé in Haifa, Israel, just before he sets off for Canada. Good evening, Ilan, and welcome back to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good evening, Mordecai. Good to talk to you, and it's good to be back on the program.
You've done some detailed historical research, and you've published many books on Palestine and Israel. You're also an activist committed to justice and peace in this conflict. How do you see the connection between your past and current research and your activism?
Well, I think if I sort of look from the perspective, the vantage point of the present, I think I became more confident in a connection, mutual impact of the research on activism. In previous years, I think I tended to separate the two and felt that these were two sort of different missions. But the more secure I became in my writing and the more clear I became in my research agenda, I tend to write not just for the sake of amusing people or entertaining them, but I really believe that my mode of selection of historical events, which is still my interest, history is still my interest, has a lot to do with trying to understand better the present and the prospects for the future. So in this respect, I think that part of the work became, at least to me, clearer, and I hope that in return also my readers found it more accessible in this respect.
When you came to Vancouver last time, you spoke about the research you'd done on the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Maybe you could give us an idea of some of the research since that time and publications and the relation that you've just articulated between the two.
Yes, definitely. In the meantime, I did several projects. I will mention them very briefly, and then I'll say that in Vancouver I'm going to talk actually on an ongoing research, which hopefully will come out in a book as well. I shifted my attention from 1948 to the chronicles and history of the Palestinian minority in Israel, which I thought is a group of Palestinians which is forgotten. In fact, the book is called The Forgotten Palestinians because of that. And I try to understand their place and location within the general question of Palestine. At the same time, I also wanted to try and tell the history of Palestine, which I did before, from a perspective of a very well-defined group of people. So I chose a Palestinian family, the Husseinis, and I told the history of Palestine through their eyes, history of 200, 250 years, with the hope that this would humanize even more or make it more intimate for readers. I also, together with Noam Chomsky, looked at the horrific Israeli attack on Gaza in 2009 as a kind of a departure point, which both of us used in order to analyze American policy towards the Middle East, the Israeli militarism, the one-state versus the two-state solution, and strategies for reconciliation and justice. That was a very interesting intellectual exercise, but I also hope it have, and I think I did, judging by the feedback so far, it had some very good impact on the discussion for many people. And finally, this is what I think I'll focus in Vancouver. I've been working for a while on the new Israeli documents released on the 1967 war, because I think we first and second year of the occupation of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip tell us many things about the history of that occupation ever since. And in the main, I'm trying to show how Israel actually pre-planned the 67 occupation before 1967, how it was very determined from the very beginning not to withdraw from these territories, never to accept, and it doesn't matter whether they were on the left or on the right, the idea of an independent state next to Palestine, and how they understood that the United States would never stand in their way in implementing a unilateral annexation of those parts of the West Bank that they deemed as part of the land of Israel. So all these issues will hopefully come out in a book called The Bureaucracy of Evil, but the gist of that book will be presented in Vancouver.
I'd like to get to that in a little more detail in a second, yep. For sure. Looking at the activism dimension of your research, the effort to have an impact on people's consciousness, awareness, and through that motivate them to push for changes that would lead in the direction of justice. You had said at one point that Israelis were themselves in denial of ethnic cleansing, and certainly what the Palestinians call the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1947-49 period, and certainly people outside of Palestine have been for a long time, I would say, relatively amnesiac, if not oblivious, of the Nakba. Have you noticed some changes in this dimension of awareness, both among Israelis themselves and also you travel a great deal internationally? Has there been some opening of the minds to that important reality of the Palestinian historic experience?
Yes, there have been changes. They're very different. I think there's a very positive change outside of Israel. I think the truth about what happened in 1948 and the significance of what happened in 1948 to the present and future of Israel and Palestine is far better understood now than it was 10 years ago. And among the activists and NGOs who used to support almost religiously the idea of two-state solution, 1948 never figured, even among the activists for peace and reconciliation in Israel and Palestine. And now not only they, but I think also quite many sections of the mainstream media and academia in the world are far better equipped to understand the significance of this, and I think there is at least as far as knowledge is concerned, this narrative of what happened is legitimized, accepted, and any other attempt to deny it is pushed aside. Unfortunately, Israel, it's very interesting, the development is a bit curious. While the denial in a way was replaced by accepting the gist of the crime that Israel committed in 1948, but at the same time the crime is now justified. So while the government, through a new law, by the way, we have two new laws that do not allow to commemorate the Nakba in Israel, as bizarre as it may sound, but these are Knesset laws that do not allow to commemorate the Nakba. The government wants by laws to deny the story. However, the Israeli mainstream media and academia and political establishment says, yes, we accept that there was an ethnic cleansing, but it was the right thing to do, and in fact they use it even to warn the Palestinians that this would happen again unless they would accept the Israeli dictate for a solution. So it's not anymore a debate about facts in Israel. It's much more a debate about the moral and ethical dimension of that story, And so far, the picture is not very promising, looking at it from here in Haifa.
I agree very strongly with you about the importance of historical awareness and how that kind of historical research is absolutely essential for political activists to formulate realistic and effective strategies for change. And in the book you mentioned that you did a series of articles and interviews with Noam Chomsky. You wrote one article about the United States policies in relation to Zionism. And I guess I just have a simple question in relation to that article. If you took someone, which might be quite realistic, is only aware of the U.S.-Israeli nexus maybe over the last 10 years at most. Many people have some sense of that. Are there elements in the longer history that would surprise a person whose historical memory is much shorter?
Yes, indeed. I think they would be surprised. I mean, there is this kind of a deterministic, teleological kind of view on American policy towards Israel has always been totally supportive of Israel, of whatever it does, and people sort of know exactly who is responsible within the United States for this unconditional support. And actually, if you look at, as you say, the widest span of history, there are two interesting formative periods in the relationship between the United States and the question of Palestine that may give hope for the future for a different American policy. One is at the very beginning of the conflict around the First World War and so on, while the two colonialist powers, Britain and France, were supportive of the idea of giving Palestine to the Zionist movement, knowing very well this would be at the expense of the indigenous native people of Palestine. Most people, including in the United States administration, were not very happy with this idea, and quite a few people in the American State Department and diplomatic service, and even beyond, were still supporting the Arab national movement at large, and the one in Palestine in particular. So that is an impressive a chapter, I think, in the history of the U.S. relationship to Palestine. And secondly, especially after during the Eisenhower, that's a bit later, during the Eisenhower administration, both professional Arabists, so-called, I mean, people who were experts on the Arab world within the American administration, and key people in the Eisenhower administration as well, and that would go on a little bit into the Kennedy administration as well, were very aware of two important things which really annoyed the Israelis to the point that they decided to create an AIPAC because of that. One is that there was no justification in the world not to allow the Palestinian refugees to return. Whether they were expelled or not didn't interest them. But they saw no reason in the world why Palestine could not receive back the Palestinians that were expelled, regardless of who was now the sovereign or the ruler, which was a very problematic position for the Israelis. And secondly, the Israeli very active diplomacy against any inside the Middle Eastern politics, which of course the peak was the collusion with Britain and France in the attempt to topple Nasser in 1956, was very much against American policy in those days, which were much more interested in keeping the status quo and seeking a relationship with the new forces that emerge in the Arab world. And in many ways, the American change of policy has a lot to do with locating Israel at the very center of Middle Eastern policy, which characterized the Johnson administration and all the administrations ever since.
Now, you have mentioned, of course, that your coming talk is dealing with Israeli policy of 67 and how it connects its intentional occupation, invasion, and its plan to, from the beginning, to maintain its control of conquered lands. The beginning part of your title of your talk says, "The False Paradigm of Peace." Maybe you could explain that a little bit.
Yes, I think the paradigm of peace which dominated the peace efforts until now, diplomatic efforts, and also the major thought about what is the right way forward in Israel and Palestine is based on the idea that there is a parity between the Israelis and the Palestinians. All you need is a very shrewd businessman who would find a compromise between two sides which are equally to be blamed for not having a peace, and therefore all kinds of ideas of partition and division and sharing the blame are put forward, which have nothing whatsoever to do with the reality on the ground. In fact, the very idea that what we are seeking in Israel and Palestine is peace is quite wrong. We're not seeking peace. Peace will hopefully will be one of our objects in the distant future. What we are seeking in Israel and Palestine is the end of colonialism, the end of occupation, the end of dispossession, which are far more concrete and different objectives than peace. Peace you can achieve between two sovereign states that are at war. But before any political peaceful solution is achieved, you have to end oppression. And I think that the Israelis very cleverly succeeded in getting everyone with very good intentions, especially in the West, to be involved in what they call the peace negotiations, where actually what they meant is a lot of diplomatic effort that would allow them to continue the unilateral policy on the ground to deal with the major problem that 1967 confronted them with. The problem was that they received, or they occupied, the territories they needed to feel viable and defensible. But with it came the population, which endangered the Zionist idea from a demographic point of view. And they needed time to find a way of how to keep the territories without having the people incorporated into the state. They needed time to find a way to reconcile the two. And the so-called peace effort provided them both the time and the umbrella and immunity for a policy that, by any standard of international law, is illegal and unacceptable.
Well, we'll encourage people certainly to come and hear your lecture and to hear more about what it's necessary for us to understand to allow us to push in the direction of the end of colonialism. But I'd like to close with a question that arises, I think, over and over again, the kind of earthquake that has, with at least initial tremors, resulted in the toppling of Mubarak in Egypt. It's part of a complex ongoing series of popular rebellions throughout the Middle East and North Africa. The outcomes are far from determined at present. But how do you see these revolts impacting on the Palestinian people's struggle?
Yes, indeed. As you say, we don't know yet how long this quake will last, and we definitely don't know yet what exactly would be the human and political landscape after it subsides. But we can say one thing that I think we with some confidence, and this is that this was a rebellion, among other things, against politics from above, against political and economic elites determining the well-being and the welfare and the identity and life of people. In various places in the Arab world, this rebellion takes different shape, but all in all, this is really a revolution from below, from the inside. It's not, as we used to see in the Arab world, one particularly group tries to oust another particular group and may more or less leave the political landscape as it is. Now, this is also relates to what we called before the false paradigm, because the so-called peace process was also based on a certain politics of elite or elite politics. And again, one I'm not a prophet, and I have no idea how this would translate into action in Palestine, although I can already see the beginning of this. But there is no doubt that the politicians have lost their legitimacy in the eyes of the people on both sides to be the ones who would decide how best the people would live here. And I think that this will take time before it matures in Israel and Palestine. But you will not be able to use the same kind of paradigms or models that were imposed from above with the help of the regimes such as the Mubarak regime or the American administration. It may be very chaotic, as it is in Syria and Libya. It may be more democratized, a more democratized process, as it has been in Egypt. Or maybe, as always is the case with Palestine, it would be a unique local version of Palestine for that revolution. But that revolution will come because oppression and colonization will never last forever. It's much better to try and solve it now for the sake of everyone, the victimizers and the victims. But sometimes you need more time for that to happen.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Ilan, for speaking with us today. We really appreciate it, and we do look forward to your talk in Vancouver. Travel well on your journey across the country.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Our guest has been Professor Ilan Pappé, historian and activist. He teaches in Britain at Essex University, where he's director of the university's European Center for Palestine Studies and co-director of the Exeter Center for Ethnopolitical Studies. Ilan Pappé will be speaking in Vancouver next Saturday, May 5th, at 7 p.m. at the Vancouver Central Library downtown. That's 350 West Georgia in the Alice McKay Room. Admission is $10 for students, $15 for non-students. Tickets can be bought from Ticketmaster, or if you don't want to pay their service charge, you can get them at the door. But please come early to make sure you will have a seat.